positive portrayal, reflection, and accessible media. AMI believes everyone should be included, and that includes you.
Is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all. And it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
For a community who will support you on your academic journey, the Student Learning Commons has got your back. The Student Learning Commons is SFU's Academic Success Center. We provide free workshops, one-on-one consultations, coaching, and online tutoring with a focus on writing, study skills, and academic English. All Student Learning Commons programs and services are available to SFU students and are approved by SFU as providing ethical, academically honest support. Learn more by visiting our locations in the library on all three SFU campuses, or check us out online at learningcommons.sfu.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.
This is The Scoop, a weekly regional roundup of stories from remote radio stations in British Columbia. Each week, The Scoop features news created by fellow LJI journalists in the communities of Smithers, Prince George, Nanaimo, Burnaby, and the Comox Valley. LJI is the local journalism initiative, and it's how your best local news is funded on these participating stations. Now, let's see what's happening this week in BC.
Today on The Scoop, a new Culture Quest app encourages people to explore the North Shore. Danny Nesvarandi at CJSF in Burnaby has more. Family Music Camp strikes a new chord in the Comox Valley. That coming from Heather Watson at CHLY in Nanaimo. And family members and friends of Sebastian Moore march for justice in Terrace on the slain teen's birthday. Pam Hassan at CICK News reports. You're listening to The Scoop.
This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Are you looking for a quest this summer? Well, the North Shore may just be the place to visit. Recently, North Van Arts, which is the Community Arts Council of North Vancouver, released an app called the North Shore Culture Quest, which serves to gamify exploration of the North Shore's notable sites and locales. To learn more about how this app came to be, as well as how it can be used for questing, we traveled to North Vancouver's Lonsdale Shipyards, where we met with Anna Lynch, the executive director of North Van Arts.
Yeah, so back in 2020, the North Shore Culture Compass, which is a website with an interactive map, was first published. It was a project that had been in the works for a long time beforehand. And basically the map lists cultural points of interest for all of the North Shore. So that's West Vancouver and North Vancouver. And the reason behind creating it is multiple reasons, but one of them is to support having archival collections and research around different cultural hubs and points of significance, like public art and heritage trails. But it can also be used to plan trips, find new events and places to go, and discover new cultural organizations or pieces of art. So really the website itself is twofold. When the website was launched, one of the ways to promote it, because it came out during the COVID-19 pandemic, was to create treasure hunts. And the treasure hunts were originally PDF scavenger hunts created to get people to explore different areas that were listed on the Culture Compass. Since then, we've decided to develop the treasure hunts into its own app, which is our new North Shore Culture Quest app, which gamifies finding different locations and clues so that you can learn a little bit more about the cultural history and heritage of the North Shore and find some hidden gems along the way.
If you think that the North Shore Culture Quest app has any similarities to other popular virtual game apps that require you to go outside, you wouldn't be the only one.
Internally, we've already been referring it to as a cultural Pokemon Go. So it's the same kind of idea, and we're definitely getting quite a lot of downloads, not just from local residents, but from people all across Metro Vancouver who are, you know, coming across to the North Shore for the day and looking for something a little bit different to do. The plan is that we're going to release different quests each month in different locations. So we have neighborhoods listed across the North Shore to help keep it fresh and relevant and give people something to come back to each month.
At the end of our conversation, we asked Anna Lynch if she could explain one of these quests for us.
Yeah, so one of the first quests that we launched last month is called Around the Shipyards, and all the clues, there's 6 clues in and around the shipyards area, so it's great for those who are just coming across on the sea bus or getting down here by one of the local buses. And that one is going to be permanently on the app, so it can be played at any time.
Seeing as how we were already at the Lonsdale Shipyards, we asked Lynch if she would be open to going through the Lonsdale Shipyards culture quest with us. She agreed, and our journey commenced.
So we need to head to the main entrance of the Lonsdale Key Market, next to Quayside Plaza. Look up. Can you see the 18-meter tall Q Tower? It was designed so it would be visible from downtown Vancouver. Just opposite on the plaza, we'll find some flagpoles and maybe, if we're lucky, a street performer. How many flagpoles are there? All right, let's go.
So then we walked to the entrance of the Lonsdale Key Market, where we counted the number of flagpoles that were in front of the building.
Flagpoles. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it says take the last letter of that number for your clue. So the last letter of 5 is E, so E is our letter, and then we submit.
We uncovered a clue in the form of a single letter. We continued to uncover clues throughout the shipyards until we reached our final objective, which required us to locate and take a photograph of a historical site within the shipyards.
Head to the location, open your camera, and line up the image. So for the photo-based locations, you'll see a location on the map, but you can also see how far away you are. So right now we're 95 meters away, and it says you're not close enough yet to take your photo. Head a little closer. It helps put you in the right direction. It also stops people to be able to cheat by doing them at home. So we're 45 meters away, but we're able to take a picture. So let's press take photo to see what I'm looking for. So this is what the original picture was.
At this point in the quest, each task completed has unlocked a new letter, and we're about to find out that once all of these tasks are completed, you're given an incomplete sentence, one that you can now complete with a word formed by the letters you've unlocked.
How do you go. We get confetti. And we have a letter G. So now we should have all the letters for our code word. And the clue for that is the Shipyards District is a place, great place to something, to have fun with your friends and family. Let's see, do you have any idea?
I did not have any idea, but thankfully I was provided a hint that made the answer much clearer.
Ah, okay, I think I know it. So, G-A-T-H-E-R, gather.
There you go. Great. So we have completed our first quest.
And with that, our quest was completed. And while there are only a few other quests to complete at the moment, there are over 1,000 points of interest on the Culture Compass map, with new quests coming monthly, according to North Van Arts. For those interested in the North Shore Culture Quest, the app can be found on the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is a CHLY and CBOX news update. Jam Camp, a musical summer camp for families across BC, is coming to Vancouver Island for the first time this August and will be taking place at Camp Gilwell, just outside Courtney. The camp itself is a five-day gathering of participating families, organizers, volunteers, and facilitators. Many of the staff are full-time musicians, bringing their knowledge and experience to guide participants of all backgrounds through a week of making music.
I think what it does is it brings all the different ages to experience something together. And music is just one of those art forms that can be experienced at many different experiential levels. So if you have an adult who's a really great musician, they can jam with a child who's just learning, or sometimes you get the opposite. You get a child who is an exceptional singer, or maybe they've played the piano already, and then you have an adult who's never played anything in their life, and they can still get together and share an experience of music together. And there's nothing to really separate out if they're talented or not. It's really just about being joyful.
Wendy Lopatecki and her husband Colin Hamilton are co-managers of Jam Camp on the Island. They first attended Jam Camp as volunteers with their two children, Taven and Cedar, in 2010, and were quickly invited back as facilitators, working at various Jam Camp locations around BC in the following years.
Which is kind of a crazy thing, since we're not professional musicians, as most of their facilitators are very professional musicians, but because we were a family unit, that worked out really well.
Jam Camp first started in 2003 at a provincial campground on Maple Lake after Thomas Tumbach, a classically trained violinist, was asked by parents of his violin students if he would start a music camp with the values he nurtured. Values like creativity, collaboration, and multicultural exploration. Thomas and his wife Selena Tumbach incorporated the nonprofit Jam Camp Society with Selena's sister and brother-in-law in 2005. In the 20 years since, the society has hosted camps through the interior of BC, across the province, and even internationally in Japan. One nearby location was Jam Camp by the Sea on Salt Spring Island. Wendy Lopatecki and Colin Hamilton co-managed the camp from 2016 to 2019.
We found that we could run it at Ruckel Park on Salt Spring Island because they have three group sites, that we could rent all of the group sites and do this outdoor camp. No power, just all acoustic. And so we did that for 5 years before COVID.
Returning to Ruckel Park since COVID has not been an option. So last year, when Hamilton learned of Camp Gilwell near Courtney and paid a visit, they decided it would be a good fit for the new coastal camp, Jam Camp on the Island.
It seems like a perfect place, very central on the island and lots of nature. All the camping's in the trees. There's a little creek running through with a swimming hole. It's only 15 or 20 minute drive from the ocean or the mountain if families want to go continue their adventures before or after camp. So yeah, no, it's we're really looking forward to it.
Just from seeing the site up there and knowing what we kind of need, what kind of infrastructure we need, it looks perfect. It's got this beautiful open field. It's got this lovely little like amphitheater, like benches in a circle. It's got a staff kitchen.
Family campers bring their own camping setup, including tents, their own camping kitchens, and all their own food, but the organization hires a cook to feed the facilitators. There are also toilet facilities, and Lopateki emphasizes the importance of the little river that allows a space for campers to relax and play safely. Lopateki says one challenge coming to a new location is finding enough participants to create the big community feeling that the more established locations have grown to support. This also impacts how many facilitators the program can fund because, as Lopateki says,
we would love it to just be free for everyone. Of course, we also really want to make sure we pay our facilitators well because they do a lot of work as well.
Lopateki also spoke to some of the successes of the program.
I think a lot of the successes tend to be personal for the campers. Either they're overcoming challenges of either previous negative musical experiences, either just about, you know, the pressures of being a good musician versus the freedom of just playing music because you love it and enjoy it. So I've really seen that in a lot of campers. Also just with children, successes with children, being given the freedom to really explore however they want to express themselves through music and also song, singing, through dance and movement, and being just in a beautiful natural setting.
As the co-managers prepare to welcome families to the Comox Valley, where they will gather together outdoors to camp, play, and jam out, Lopateki reflects on the meaning of music and community.
Community and music for me and our family is almost, I feel kind of like one thing. Music is so cultural, and in so many cultures, in the past especially, music is what has brought people together in a common themes of what their culture is or what they believe in their culture, their values are.
Lopateki says that Jam Camp is about inclusivity, equality, and empathy, listening and giving equal space to everyone who is there, collaborating together to create something that represents everyone's experiences or culture, and learning from one another.
We hear a lot of feedback from families that when they go home, they're more comfortable as a family to explore music together during the year because they just have that environment in which they could explore playing music together in a variety of instrumentations or, you know, everyone finds something that they love to do.
Jam Camp will be coming to the Comox Valley August 10th through 15th, and the organizers are hopeful to return again next year. To learn more about the program or follow along for future camps, visit at Jam Camp on Instagram and Facebook or jamcamp.org. For CHLY and CVOX News, this is Heather Watson.
This is CICK News. On Sunday, August 10th in Terrace, a group of about 50 people gathered on Memorial Trail to begin a march for justice. Sebastian Moore was 17 when he was killed by another 17-year-old in November of 2023. After a painful wait of 17 months where Sebastian's family was not allowed to speak publicly about the death of Sebastian, Crown Counsel informed the family that the person who stabbed Sebastian was acquitted of any charges and acted in self-defense. The Moore family was rocked by this news, and since April when they received word from Crown on the charges, they've been organized and outspoken as to what they believe is an injustice against the memory of their boy, Sebastian. I walked with Sebastian's grandmother, mother, sister, grandfather, and many others who loved him on the anniversary of his birthday, August 10th, through the streets of Terrace.
My name is Charlene Moore. I'm Sebastian Moore's auntie. His mother is my sister. Wolf from the Kitsilis Nation. Today would have been Sebastian's 19th birthday. It's been a difficult journey, seeing everybody else grow up and go through all the milestones that he should have been able to go through. And it just makes that much more painful because he has no justice for his murder.
Mm-hmm. Charlene, was there a significance to the route that we took, or was it kind of for as many eyes as possible?
Well, it's the center of the two sister nations, Kitsimkalem and Kitsilis, but mainly we wanted to walk past the RCMP detachment, just to make as much of an impact as we can, try to be seen as much as possible, because as we continue to take the petition around, There's still so many people from Terrace that have not heard of this case and are not aware of what's the injustice that has been happening.
Can you kind of explain the intent of the petition?
To appeal the decision and getting support from the political entities as much as we can, and basically raising awareness for the injustice that's taken place, not just for our family, but that this is happening everywhere in BC, especially because, yeah, Crown Council is the one who ultimately makes the decision. Even though the RCMP wish to press charges, they can't. It's up to Crown Council, and we feel that they have acted hastily and have not looked at everything that's contained in the investigation.
Okay, my name is Rick Moore. I'm originally from the Nass River. I met who is the grandmother of my grandkids when I was very young, and we started a family at 18, and my oldest daughter's name is Leslie. Leslie is the mother of the young fella that we lost.
We just walked part of the memorial trail here, and today is Sebastian's birthday. So can you talk a little bit about how that felt?
Normally, because of the recent recent medical condition, I suffered some seizures. I've been recently diagnosed as a epileptic. My epilepsy was triggered, trauma induced. The support we've been getting from our family and from people that are not family has been overwhelming. I know that Seb had many, many friends that looked up to him because he was he would defend anybody that was younger than him that was bullied. So he was an anti-bully, and this is what makes it so hard for us to deal with what we're going through, is because he was such a genuine person. We all make mistakes, but we don't deserve to be killed to make a mistake on this. This is exactly what happened to him. He made a mistake, and it was the severity of the actions against him where it was too much. My grandson was such a wonderful boy. He had a heart of gold. He would not hurt an animal. He would not hurt anything. The night that this happened to him, he was drinking, and they say that the other person acted in self-defense. Who defends themselves with two knives? I feel like they protect the wrong people. It's given me a whole new perspective of the RCMP and what their agenda is. And I hate to say it, but I don't think it's genuine or beneficial for First Nations.
The RCMP was not present at the march, which culminated at the pavilion in George Little Park. Gladys Raddick, spokesperson for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Girls and Boys, spoke last after Kitsilis Chief Counselor Glenn Bennett and family members talked about their experience.
We need to really, really think about what we really, really want, and we need to unite and work together as a people and start confronting these government officials. I don't see the mayor here. I don't see any of our representatives here, and yet we're the ones that voted them in. We need justice. We need justice for Seb and thousands of other men and boys in this country and all the women and girls that are going missing. This is a genocide against our people. We have to stand up. We have to stand up, and we have to face them, and we have to tell them that it's got to stop. Writing your MLAs, confronting them, that's the only way we can do it.
That's it for this week's Scoop. Catch us next week, Thursdays at 12 p.m. in Smithers, Thursdays at 4 p.m. in Burnaby, Fridays at 8 a.m. in Nanaimo, and weekdays at 7:30 in Prince George. The Scoop was made possible by funding from the Canadian government and the Local Journalism Initiative, a Community Radio Fund of Canada initiative.
This is Bird Note. join us now for another Brooklyn ball game. This is the old redhead, Red Barber.
Longtime Brooklyn Dodger and later New York Yankee announcer Red Barber grew up in Mississippi and was known for his folksy way of speaking.
They call him the Big Cat, and he swings that heavy bat as though it weighed no more than a dry turkey feather.
One of his best-known catchphrases was that a player in a winning position was sitting in the catbird seat.
Delivers outside for ball three, and it's 3-0. Fry's sitting up there in the catbird seat.
But what is a catbird seat? And what, for that matter, is a catbird? Well, the catbird part is easy. It's a cousin of the mockingbird in the bird family known as the mimids. And it does sound a little like a cat. As for the saying, it's been around since the 19th century, probably originating in the southern U.S., where there are lots of gray catbirds. The bird is normally a skulker, foraging near the ground or in dense underbrush. But during the breeding season, gray catbirds sometimes fight amongst themselves for the best territories. As part of the competition, the two combatants sing their way to higher and higher perches. The one who finally takes the highest perch is, well, sitting in the catbird seat, with the best view, in control, top bird, so to speak. So take it from Red Barber. The catbird seat is the place to be. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 is where you can listen to fresh new releases from any genre, any day of the week. Visit cjsf.ca for the latest open mic schedule.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When large companies take climate action, it's often because of pressure from policymakers, lenders, or shareholders.
But for a really long time, employees have been an untapped stakeholder group in that wheel of influence that can get corporate CEOs and boards to make different decisions.
Lucy Piper's with the nonprofit Work for Climate, which aims to change that. The group runs a 3-month course which teaches people how to push for climate action from within a company.
We had one engineer who was working with us, and he was able to successfully shift his very conservative engineering firm to 100% renewable energy.
Another participant worked for a cycling company and has since been pushing her industry to avoid having the fossil fuel industry sponsor events. Work for Climate began in Australia, but to expand its impact, it's now teamed up with Project Drawdown and other organizations from around the world. Together, they formed the Employee Climate Action Network and consolidated all their tools and resources into one searchable hub. So any employee anywhere can find the support they need to drive climate action at work. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Uniquely curated programming by our hosts maintains an independent voice among the masses. You keep CJSF independent.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 280, and I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in. On the broadcast this week, I'm going to be featuring a conversation with educator and longtime activist Rabab Abdul Hadi. Rabab has been an important Palestinian voice working to raise the profile of the Palestine Solidarity Movement and the struggle of the Palestinian people for human rights, for justice, for dignity for many years. Rabab has been very active in organizing with educators and students in the context of California and beyond over the last years, and I thought it would be important to highlight Rabab's voice. I speak with her about the connections between the Palestine movement for justice and other struggles all around the world, looking at the connections between the local and the global. I think this is an important and wide-ranging interview with a voice that has faced a lot of pressure to be silent in the context of the United States, but has resisted and opposed that. So it's really a pleasure to feature this conversation with